Welcome to the How the Heck Have You Been podcast. I'm Mark, and as the title would suggest, I just call up a bunch of people I haven't talked to forever and ask them how the heck they have been. So here's some intro music and the show. All right, guys, here's my conversation with Carlos Barbosa, a peer of mine from Hearst Junior High and LD Bell High School. You know, we chit-chatted here and there, had some lighthearted conversation, but we also covered topics such as atheism versus religion and the L.A. race riots, which he experienced growing up in L.A. as like a 5 or 6 year old. So I hope you enjoy both the light and heavy parts of our conversation. There he is. That was fast. Look at you.
Mark.
How's it going, Carlos?
Good, good.
How's it going, man? How the heck have you been?
It's been great. It's been interesting. It's been up and down like everyone else, but overall good. I'm putting on my boots.
What kind of boots you rocking?
Cowboy boots.
I need to get some. I was at a where was it? Nice, not bad. I was somewhere. Oh, on the Grapevine Main Street, and I put on a cowboy hat and had like the stubble. I was like, I think I can pull this off. So I need to get myself at least a hat and some boots. My mother-in-law, her husband's from Germany, and so he came over and he like got some real, I don't know if they're snakeskin or just regular leather boots, but he was all into it as a foreigner getting into the Texas vibe.
Yeah, if you come to Texas, you got to see the boots, the cowboys, and sometimes even the horses.
Yep. It's funny too, because people who aren't from here assume we ride horses everywhere, but I do live in a neighborhood that like has horses next door, like just down the street. You know, they've got horses. I'm like, oh, it really is ranch style in Texas. And we're just at a park in Keller, and there's a huge field with cows in it. So it kind of does play into the stereotype of cattle everywhere.
Yeah. If you go out in the country, there's cattle everywhere. There's, even not too long ago, 10 years ago, I had a house. I was living in the Keller area, and there were cows in their backyards, right? And then they started expanding, it just boomed. So you still have a lot of that culture. You just have to go outside of the city.
Yep. All right, so let's rewind, because now you didn't go to the same elementary school as I did, right? Were you like Hearst Hills back in the day?
My kids are going to Hearst Hills Elementary, but
I saw. Okay, I saw that school. PTA on Facebook. Where did you go?
So I grew up in Los Angeles, California.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I've been to the different areas of this country, lived in. I've experienced the different perspectives as well as the result. But I've started off like Lingwood, California. Washington Elementary School was the name of it. It was a different experience. It was just like the songs, a lot of the rap songs, just like that. Just imagine that. That it was there. Made a lot of good friends there. I remember. I still somehow keep sort of in touch with a few I've had in the past. You know, some of those childhood friends that you've had growing up with around, you know, in elementary school. I think some of them are on my Facebook. There are two of them, I think. And then we moved to a town called Downey, California. And that was more of a middle class, upper middle class type of place, but very California style.
Was that north or south of LA? I guess most stuff is north, right? But
I think, well, if I look at the map, I can tell you right away that I think it's west of Los Angeles or south.
Okay.
But it's they're all close to each other, but there's so much traffic over there that going to the beach would take 2 hours.
Yeah. Right? I was just listening a year or two ago, Elon Musk was having an interview. I think he was in LA, and they kept asking him like if he could solve one problem, because I guess he got stuck in traffic for like an hour and a half. Even though he's Elon Musk, he's like, I would fix the traffic. He just kept harping on how terrible the traffic was.
Yes. Southeast.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was just thinking. So that was in 1992 was when all the L.A. riots were happening, and we would have been like 6 years old, right? So that was like right around that. You would have been kindergarten, first grade when all that craziness was going down.
Oh my God, I have a very personal experience about that. Yeah, that happened right in my backyard almost.
That's crazy.
I don't know how deep you want me to get into this, but it was sadly very very stressful. It was a war zone almost. A lot of people upset, different perspectives. You know, business owners got their guns too. Everybody was armed. One of the things that people were really afraid of is people attacking each other's homes. That was a big concern. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, as you can imagine, some of the business owners at the end ended up taking things in their own hands. And so they didn't trust really anybody that was walking the streets. So people thought, well, it might get to the point where is this going to turn into a house to house thing? You know, these are the conversations that people would have with each other, not really publicized in the media.
Yeah.
So it was very, intense. It was very sad. Yeah, I was right there. I remember thinking that. So my dad was in the Marines, so he's always had like military weapons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's what he, you know, that's what he does. And they're brainwashed. I guess everybody's brainwashed is the way I see it, but they're conditioned to be soldiers. So if something happens, they'll call up and say, "Hey, you ready? I'm ready to fight." You know, like
yep.
With 9/11, he actually called. And I'm like, are you crazy? He's like, yeah, this was done on purpose. Somebody has to die for this. I'm like, oh, okay. Of course, they told them, you know, we got enough people. Go back home. But and other people did the same thing from what I understood. But there, he had weapons. And so I grew up around that. And I was used to seeing weapons. And it didn't really scare me. It scared me in a respectful way, right? Like, you know not to play with those because people can get hurt.
Yeah.
So I was always fully aware of that.
Well, there's two. I've got a friend who's a big gun advocate too, and he's, you know, his point is there's kind of two groups of them. A lot of the pro-gun people are super strict about gun safety. They'll go on, you know, if they're having an event where they're shooting, they'll have one person who's designated, doesn't drink the whole weekend, you know, is super safe. And then you have the other ones who are kind of more of the reckless ones who don't respect the danger of it as much. But
yes, you're absolutely right. There's people who are. It's almost like a religion of gun, where you have a process and you have security, safety measures, and if you don't know how to do that, or if you're not willing to learn, you lose, you know, a certain credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, and then you have others that are just crazy. So there's a balance that's needed. But in this case, it was something that got stuck in my brain forever, since I can remember, because I was told that if people start rushing into the house, now I was like 6 or 5.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, you're going to have to fight to the death. And I'm like, what?
That is so crazy. I've got a 6-year-old daughter and a 8-year-old daughter. I cannot imagine having to tell them that. It's no way to live.
Yeah. But I mean, so I lived in a street where the backyard led to a back alley, and the back alley led to a major street. The back alley had drug dealers. They had prostitutes. I used to see them all the time. I used to walk around them all the time. And then that's where the riots took place too. So they could have easily just taken a quick turn. It was intense. Like, I have memories of all that, like what condoms were. I knew what they were, what they were for, just because I asked, like, what's that thing? Don't touch it.
Yeah, don't touch it.
And so, you know, you ask enough questions and you start piecing things together, and then they have to tell you, and then you think about it again because you just go back to being a kid.
So now, was all of that kind of the reason that y'all moved to a more rural area?
Well, yeah, that's one of the reasons why we moved away from that. Although, I mean, we went back there just to look, and we even visited a neighbor there, and it's like it's not even the same as it was before. It's perfectly state now, at least that part. But like there was this one time where this one cop, he saved my life. I didn't know it at that time, but I thought about it like even in my childhood when I got older. It was around the same time. I was younger, between 6 and 7 or something. And I walked out because I heard some gunshots and I thought I was going to watch it like a movie. And I walked into it, right? Totally illogical, I know, as a kid, especially. And I saw a cop hiding behind the car, and then another cop in the same, you know, the same car, and then this dude hiding in the corner, and he was blasting at them, and then the other guys were blasting back. And then I thought, man, I thought I was gonna go back to get some food to watch, like popcorn, you know, that kind of mentality. And then I thought, no, I'm gonna miss the action, so I wanted to get closer. I thought, oh, they're not gonna aim at me. I'm not part of the fight. Yeah, and this one cop sees me, and he's talking with his partner, and this partner's like, he just got really angry. His face turned really red, like bright red, like all his blood was rushing to his face out of anger. And then he decided to run at me so that I can leave. And then the other cop started covering and shot at him over and over and over. And then that, because, you know, he was risking his life so I can leave. So I ran to my house, or to the house. And when I ran into the house, I locked the door. Of course, he didn't follow me. He went back to, you know, I don't know what happened to them. I'm guessing they arrested the person because I didn't see any ambulances or anything happen. It just went away. I told my parents, and I got like the beating of my life. That was one of those moments where you're like, oh yeah, you stupid. Now you're gonna have to pay with pain, so you will never forget.
Better to have the beating than to ever think that's a good idea again and get shot. But man,
exactly. It was rough. It was a rough mentality, the mindset. It really was. The schools were neglected for many reasons, for good and bad reasons. The policies. I remember the policies changed. Like, I grew up speaking Spanish only. Even though my great-grandmother or my grandmother was born here, I don't know if it was California or Texas, one or the other, they would go back and forth, but I grew up speaking Spanish only. And they had like the school, they were teaching us schools in Spanish and English, but then they switched and they said only English. I just so happened to be someone who was interested in history or language and things like that.
The whole state of California, from what I understand, switched from only English instead of transitioning slowly from Spanish to English so that they won't be behind. It caused a lot of problems because a lot of the people who didn't know English, they just stayed behind, right? Because they couldn't advance until they learned English. And by the time you learn English, it's been, what, 3-4 years? You lost 3 or 4 years. So I had already lost really like 2 or 3 years from a bunch of classes that never really had a full-time teacher, just a bunch of substitutes. Plus, on top of that, it just gets worse and worse. So eventually, we moved to a different school district for the same reason, because it wasn't a school where you had helicopters chasing criminals in the schools, right, every day.
Yeah.
So, and to me, that was normal. Like, they would run past me and things, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's another day. We went to Downey, and that was a whole new world. It was a whole new world. I was like, you know, it was like a different country, pretty much. And there was different. So that was a lot of stability, a lot of people making plans for things and doing things. You know, what is this, participation? A lot of
looking into the future. You know, trying to contribute to the town around you. Yeah.
I got exposed to that. My sisters were younger, so they got exposed to that a lot earlier. I got to experience the bad end and remember. Mm-hmm. And then by the time we got to Texas, so whatever's happening now with the home prices going up and exploding, and the economy exploding, and everything, the way things are happening now, that's the exact same thing that was happening in California.
Yeah,
very similar. Very similar. And I just remember thinking, maybe you should keep the house for 2 years and then make $1 million. But We came over here like in 1999 or 2000. Now, we started off in Irving in an apartment there. And I was going to Irving High School. No, not high school. Middle school, where they forced us to wear uniforms. So that was another world where I was never forced to wear a uniform.
Another culture shock.
Another culture shock, yes. And it was like a private school, and we were supposed to sit. And a certain, we have assigned seats in the lunch room or whatever. And I don't know. It was different. And of course, it was middle school. And you go through all the growth pains like everyone else.
It's
right?
The worst.
The friend who has a girlfriend whose girlfriend was cheating on him, but he wouldn't believe you. You know, a bunch of dumb drama.
And you can never, they're never going to take your friend, the friend's side. They're always going to take the girlfriend's side until they figure it out for themselves.
That.
Yep.
I learned that.
It does no good trying to, yeah. They're
going through nature.
Yep.
Just let them go through it. So, and then eventually, there was this house that was being sold by a teacher. In River Trails, and that's where we moved to. She was getting a divorce, and so they just wanted to leave really quick, and so houses, they just sold it for whatever price, and my parents just happened to be at the right place at the right time, and they got the house.
Nice.
And that's how I ended up in River Trails, going to Hearst Junior High.
Yeah, man. And HJA. I bet that was another culture shock.
Yes, it was. It was.
Well, what brought you guys to Texas in the first place? Did you have family over here or a job that you opened up for your dad or mom?
It was not my mom. My mom finds random jobs. Like, she was working at the elementary school back in California because I was like I was turning into a Bart Simpson. I was really bad. And I, you know, I remember thinking I was going to plan things and just, I had like a weird motto. It was bad, but she ended up getting a job at the school, and so I calmed down for that. And then once we moved here, it was for her reason was because of family being here.
Okay. Yeah.
And my dad's reason was because of jobs being here. So that's pretty much it. I think that was the reason I was given. And so we just, you know,
leave it at that.
Just follow them up 13.
Yeah.
that's all I knew. So, yeah, we came here, and then we went to Hearst Hills. No, no, not Hearst Hills. Hearst Junior High. Yeah, it was like another country in itself. So I felt like I've lived in three, four different countries in the country. You look at a map and it really is like that. You have like different cultures within the country. It's just the way it is. Even Canada probably has the same thing with Quebec, Mexico, pretty much any country that's sizable, even the small ones have regions.
Yeah. A lot of people like in Europe don't quite understand how vast America is, how many different, areas and different cultures there are. They think, you know, somebody from up the Northeast is experiencing the same thing as somebody from LA versus Portland, Oregon. It's like just completely different worlds. Climates
exactly.
as well,
Climate, everything. It was a different set of rules back in the day. People developed different ways of surviving, and that's now we have television and modern telecommunication and information era that we're in, the medieval side of the information era. But that's what's keeping everyone together, really. Otherwise, we'd be fighting each other more probably. But information is what's keeping people together, I believe, just at the same time. But anyway, I guess it's a different topic. But,
yeah.
But yeah, it's different cultures. And, it went by like that to me, like everything, because every piece was like a segment, right? And then boom, boom, like California, so a different part of California, then Irving, and then HEB. But I've stayed in, and then once I graduated, I then moved to the Keller area.
Yeah, so you've just been here ever since.
And I've stayed, and then I went back to HEB. I'm living in River Charles again because my wife got a real estate license and she wanted to try it out. So we moved and started experimenting with real estate investments and that kind of thing. And so we moved again a couple of blocks away, I started off working at Lockheed for a while.
Oh, cool.
That was pretty cool and interesting. Got to see all the planes taking off. I went to UTA. I didn't know what school I was going to go to be honest.
Go Mavericks. Go Mavericks.
That I had to prepare for. Huh?
I said go Mavericks. Both my sisters went to UTA.
Yeah. Both who?
Both my two older sisters majored in art in Arlington.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they have a pretty good art. I know they have a really strong architecture program over there, and they have a lot of art things around the architecture building.
They did. They both did the glass blowing, which was it's actually one of the few schools in Texas that has a good glass blowing program. But yeah, my sister wanted to be an architect and then decided it wasn't for her and just is teaching art now, and back in Arlington, actually. But
wow. Interesting. I didn't know that it was one of the few places to blow, to get a degree in blowing glass. But I mean, Texas is one of the. I think they have a lot of art.
It's got a lot of good art.
Austin being like art capital of Texas of the U.S. is Austin, I believe. But I was into art too for a while. In case some people remember, I almost forgot, but I was into the art stuff in high school.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember you. Like, what were you doing around? Because we didn't really hang around in the same, run around in the same circles, even in junior high.
When did you graduate?
What's that?
When did you graduate high school? 2005?
No, we were both. You're 2004, right? We were both 2004.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay. I don't know why I thought maybe you were 2005 or something like that, maybe 2003, but yeah, 2004. I still talk to a lot of friends who I grew up around in the circles in high school, a couple of them. I don't know if you might know them, like Ryan Wynn and Abhijit, and just to name a few. Magdalene comes into mind. I've seen her a few times. My wife likes talking to her.
Magdalene? Yeah, what was her last name?
I don't know how to say her last name.
Yeah, it's a longer one. Yeah, I do remember Magdalene. That's funny. Well, it's crazy, too, that, some schools are small, but L.D. Bell had, 650 kids per graduating class. And, as a teacher, I remember thinking it was weird that all the freshmen didn't know each other. And then I thought, well, there's 600 of you. Like, how can you know all – you take your five classes throughout the year. You know a couple of kids in those classes, but it's a huge – it's a whole microcosm unto itself per school, but –
It is. It's an experience in itself, and everybody had a different experience for, everybody saw things differently. But for some reason, I was branded the art person. I won an award and like a medal.
Oh,
and
nice.
And then I just got stuck with that.
Yeah. Pigeonholed. Oh, there's a tendency to do that in high school. You try to attribute one single quality to that. To that kid, and it's like, all right, here's your identity now for the next 4 years.
Yeah, so that was it. And I honestly, I thought, man, I don't know. I feel like I really like to study history so that I can make strategic tactical decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like my mindset, my mentality. I wasn't always interested in art, but I did appreciate the art that it did influence me, and that was a good way to express yourself and myself, really. I thought that was a good experience. I think people should, get into some kind of art, music, drawing, anything. I think you're into art, right? Aren't you doing some kind of design?
I've always come at it kind of sideways myself, so I've never considered myself an artist, but now I'm, during COVID lockdowns, I started doing time-lapse videos and me doing... it's kind of like intricate marker drawings. And I started doing that in high school. Even before then, I would do mazes, and that kind of developed into the style I do. And then somebody online was like, hey, you should start trying to sell these. And so I thought, okay. And then that just kind of snowballed into a small business where I'm now doing art shows almost every other week, just selling my stuff. I turned it into greeting cards. And did you see the playing card deck that I've got? That's the new thing. I did the artwork for all 52 playing cards, so that's pretty. Actually, that I don't know if you remember Matt Hartman or Conrad Hartman. He goes by online. I think your friend's on Facebook, but he's the one that was like, yeah, he was like, hey, you should make this into a full deck. So I'm like, all right, 150 hours later of drawing each card, I've got it out now. But yeah, I have no formal training as an artist. It's just kind of something I've done on the side, and it's weird to start considering myself in that role, because I've always just been an English teacher, like an English guy. So, but like
you're an English teacher.
Yeah, I teach part time now. I taught at Grapevine High School for a while, and then with the district at another school called Collegiate. That's an early college high school. And I'm just doing like two classes a week at this private school while I do some art and some other stuff. So that's been fun. More parenting. Get to be more involved with the school with the daughters.
Yes.
And it looks like you've got two daughters about the same age, right? It looks like.
Oh, yeah. Two daughters. I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Yeah, Ruby. That's exactly the same.
Yeah, and then I decided, I told my wife, I'm like, Lydia, we first wanted a daughter, and then we wanted, okay, maybe a son. We get to have both the experiences of having a boy and a girl. And then she was a little wary about getting, you know, having a third child, and uh-huh. I thought, all right, let's just roll the dice, and if he comes out a baby boy, then we'll stop, and if it's a girl, we'll try again. She's like, no, we're not trying again, it's just three, and that's it.
Three and done. Yeah, we, for us, it was...
He came out of Ben.
What'd you say?
He came out of, yeah, he's Benjamin, he's a boy. He's
there
a boy.
You go.
But he's the reason why, if you can see the tiredness in my eyes.
Yeah, well, how old is he now, right now?
He's two.
Two, yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, I remember when our second came around. It doesn't double the work; it like quadruples it. To have that many young kids, we thought you think it's trouble with just one, and then everything compounds upon itself. All the extra laundry, all the extra dishes, all the loss of sleep. So you're just emerging out of that phase, right? Like of the. Finally probably getting some better sleep now that the 2-year-old is on his sleep schedule.
Exactly. Like yesterday around 6 o'clock, my body just, this happens to me sometimes, but not often, but lately it has. Catching up on sleep, where your body just says, it's going to sleep right. Boom. Now, shut down. And there's nothing you can do about it. Like this heavy sleep just fell on me and I just laid there. And I got this text from work, and I text them back really slowly, and I'm like, I'll get to you later.
Yeah.
At 7 or 8 o'clock, I woke up feeling better, and it was a really easy request, and I just did it, and like took me 10 minutes, and that was it.
Those are the best. Those are the best naps.
It felt so good to take that nap.
Yeah. So is he still napping during the day at 2?
Yes, he's still napping. We take him to a daycare, and that helps a lot.
Yeah, wears him out.
Having them, yeah, giving them that schedule, and so he knows. He fights it. He yells at me every time. He's like, no, no, no. But then he falls asleep anyways.
Yeah, that's the last. I remember the last losing that in the middle of the day nap time. It was pretty rough when they finally stopped needing it. And then they're exhausted by like 6:30 at night.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm at that point where I'm like, yeah, soon I get to have a normal life again, go places, and you know. So this pandemic thing, right, when it happened, it really took, so right before the pandemic, I was working on an MBA, right,
nice.
Against my wife's wishes.
Yeah.
But I still did it anyways, and you know, it worked out. We all came out good at the end. But it wasn't easy, right? You missed pretty much everything. And so by the time the pandemic came around, I had graduated. And it was another 2 years of being locked up, right? So it was like 2.5, 3, 5 years of being locked up.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy smokes.
Yeah, that's rough. You just had gotten done with it, and then you go back into lockdown, literal lockdown. So before that, what was your undergraduate in at UTA?
Oh, at UTA, so I didn't know what I was going to get into. I just picked whatever. I went into I thought I was going to pick something cool. I wanted to pick accounting, international business, or finance. I didn't know. I understood the basics of supply and demand to know, like, okay, based on what I want to plan in my life, I got to do something that makes sense. So, but I still picked the worst of the three, international business, for a return on investment. So I didn't know. But towards the end, I decided that the best, you know, I'm just going to graduate, get it over with. I just wanted to move out. I was living at my parents. I'm like, I'm done with this. My dad is like in that mindset forever, I guess, the Marine mind. I don't know, but I just wanted to move on. And so I moved. And so I just decided to graduate. And so I took a lot of internships. First, I started at TCC, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I got my two-year thing. Just got that out of the way, saved a bunch of money. I had to work and paid a lot of my own things, but I saved a boatload of money. And then once I went to UTA, right, I was like a couple of thousand dollars, several thousand. Like, I could have bought a nice car with that money, but I took a bunch of internships like the last couple of years because I learned, like, I saw some of the people that didn't have any work experience. They were struggling to find a job. Plus, it was 2009, 2010, right? Recession, one of the biggest in U.S. history. And so internships, I took an internship, a free one, one that didn't pay me because nobody wanted to hire me as an intern that got paid, even though I had experience as a teller and a bunch of other jobs working at Six Flags and at Sports Authority. This is very competitive, right? So you have all these people who have been preparing much longer and much harder and smarter. So I thought, okay, then I'll get a free one, one that doesn't pay. So I paid the price there. Got a good reference from them, then got an internship at Lockheed, and then 2009 hit, and I was like, whoa, I'm not going to find a job anywhere else. So I guess I got to really give them a good impression. I got a job there at Lockheed doing proposal analysis, cost estimating for the F-35 program, the worst program to get into when you're first out of college and not knowing what to do, because it's like very fast and they need, it's very in demand. And
yeah, I was about to say, that sounds pretty intense. Sounds pretty high level.
It's very intense, very advanced. And as you can imagine, people are being laid off at the same time while you're coming in as a new guy. Yeah. What are you? You're a warm body who's replacing people's friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah. that's tense.
So people were trying to really get me. So whenever, you know, whenever difficult times come, the real self comes out, right? So I'm like, I really got to network and call. Like, I remember calling companies and be like, I want you to hire me. Let me tell you why. Like, I was crazy. And I'm never that type of person. I'm quiet.
Yeah.
Got out of my comfort zone. They said, well, what do you want to do? You know, after calling them, they're like, well, let me talk to this guy who has a lot of, like, he really wants to do something. Let's talk to him. He's got a degree. Let's see what he has to say. And of course, I got rejected like 1,000 times, right? So I was like 10 times when I got like finally somebody answered somewhere, literally 1,000 times. And they would say, I want to get into finance. I'm like, what do you have a finance degree? Did you take any finance classes? Accounting classes, I did. Well, but you got other people who have accounting degrees and finance degrees, but you don't. So what? And then I'm like, well, but I can still learn. And they're like, I think you should be in marketing. You look more like a marketing person.
And it sounds like, no. Sounds like that's all you were doing was marketing yourself.
Exactly. So I said, no, you're not. I'm going to do this. And so I think it was me trying to prove myself into something, right? Like, I want to do something that's out there for me. So that's where I ended up at Lockheed doing proposal analysis and estimating for F-35 parts. I feel like I'm going through an interview right now. Working on diminishing manufacturing sources. It's you got these parts that are built. And remember, this is 2009, 2010. Some of the businesses were just going away for multiple reasons, but mainly because business was bad. And so some of these small suppliers who were building the parts for like the helmet or the display screen or whatever, you know, the plane, random parts around the plane, they couldn't make it anymore. So Lockheed and the government made a deal and said, well, we'll pay you enough money to sustain you long enough to build all those all at once. And then you make the money, we get the parts, and we won't have to redesign the parts around it, which cost even more to do so. And so that's what I did. And so, yeah. And then I had friends, I made friends, really good friends there who were like a lot more prepared and advanced degrees than I do, than I have, in like software engineer, electrical engineer, just really, really bright individuals. And they're still working there, a lot of them. Some of them moved on to other things, but that's where I met a lot of people there too.
Well, that's what you really want. And that's the ideal situation is to be, to have a bunch of friends who are a little more advanced than you. I've got a little friend group now. One's a lawyer. One studied under one of the Supreme Court justices when he went to college. He taught a class. I'm like, it's kind of cool to be around people like that, learn from them, and kind of like step up with their knowledge as well, and kind of get a better idea how the world works, how you can kind of leverage that to be more successful in the future. But
absolutely, I 100% agree with you. It has a big impact on the way you think, on what you, you know, how to develop yourself. Not only that, but it gives you ideas on how to help develop your kids too in the right direction.
Yep, 100%.
Most importantly, and all the really good influences. I have a lot of my friends are doing a lot better than me, and I'm really happy for them, and I'm really happy to know them too. And I think that's a really good thing. It also helps me try to look at things from a different perspective instead of just my own and thinking, I'm just stuck in this mindset, when really there's completely different perspectives that you can look at that are way better than mine. And so I always try to look at things from that approach.
Yep.
But
well, you said you got
thereafter. I
was gonna say, you said you got rejected like 1,000 times, and that's really it's so weird that it's like, that's kind of what you want, right? Like, you should just expect reject. You should be putting yourself out there so much that you should be getting that much rejection. Otherwise, you're not gonna hit that gold every once in a while. I mentioned it before. Yeah. I think the first episode of this season, I talked to, I don't know if you remember Lauren Denson. She went to Hurst Junior High with us, but then she didn't go all the way through Bell. But anyway, she's getting a book published coming up in the next couple of months, in August, the late August. And so it was one of those things.
That name sounds so familiar.
Yeah, she is.
I have to look her up.
You probably remember her from Hurst Junior High, because it was anyway. So it's like, you get rejected. You send off your manuscript assuming it's going to get rejected, because you get so many form letters back. It's not for us, not for us, not for us. That you become kind of just build up a resistance to it. Or even when I'm selling my art at an art fair, it's like 98% of the people who look at my stuff aren't going to buy it, right? Like, I get quote unquote rejected, most of the time, because they're not there to buy whatever I'm selling. But then you hit that exactly. One customer every 30 minutes that buys something and buys a bunch of stuff. But that idea that you don't want to be rejected because it proves something negative about you is like one of those really, I think it's a lesson probably most of us learn by our age. But when you're growing up, like teenagers, it's hard to see past that. Like, you don't want to put yourself out there and get knocked down, even though it's kind of part of it. You get over it and develop that mindset of needing it almost.
All the alarms set off. All the alarms, all these natural alarms set off when you get rejected. It's you making a decision. You have to decide you're going to make yourself become a better person, or maybe there's something wrong with your confidence and you need to work on that. And there's nothing wrong with anybody, right? It's something to assess for yourself, to look, to reflect. And then you realize, being comfortable with yourself is part of being confident, because some individuals, like you said, are looking for different things, for different needs. And sometimes they're not aligned, or, if not everybody can be the, not everybody has to offer what someone needs, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like my kids, they all like different things. Some want chocolate, some want vanilla, and there's different flavors. And so that's how you have a store. You see all these things, and this basically goes back to the basics of economics, right? That's why I mentioned that earlier. It comes down to that.
Yeah.
But when you're a teenager,
Good.
Oh yeah, when you're a teenager, like you said, the way I see things, but not everybody got to live past their teenage years growing up. right, back in the days, a lot of what we've developed and what we think is caveman mentality. And all these bells and whistles glow, and you're like, hey, you're in trouble. You got to watch
that. Yeah, that's true.
And so
yeah.
You, when you learn that as an older person, you think, all right, I can calm down. I know what you think logically, and you understand what's happening, and then you start making reasonable decisions based off of your understanding.
Well, we've, at this point in history, we've kind of circumvented a lot of evolutionary stuff, like you say. Like, you know, most genes were mutated by the time you could reproduce, and that was really the important thing. It was like, all right, get to puberty, have a kid, and then that kid, you know. And so it's like this really short time frame. And now that we're living 70, 80, 90, 100 years old, it's like we have all this leftover stuff that doesn't really apply to that that time frame. In fact, what's the word? There's some word for it. It's like basically after you stop having kids, any mutations to your genes obviously no longer matter because they're not going to get passed on. I think it's like the shadow, I'll have to look it up. But yeah, it's really fascinating. Yeah,
it is. It is. It's very fascinating, the human development. And I, being a person who has grown up very religious, it's very interesting because you might not be, but I am. And it still doesn't counter my beliefs. It's almost impossible to prove, right, that something isn't or something doesn't. But throughout all of my difficulties, all of the struggles that I have personally faced, one of the ways that have really helped me go through that is through religious experience, spiritual experience. And, you know, apparently a lot of other people have the same thing, right? Because otherwise there wouldn't exist any faiths or religions. The whole world is full of them. So it must be a way that humans really become resilient, in my perspective.
Well, listening to a guy named Brett Weinstein, and he's gotten into a little bit of controversy. He's kind of somewhat controversial figure for various reasons. But one of his arguments is that whether or not religions are you know, true in the scientific sense, they probably did evolve to be as a benefit to all of us, right? Like, it's probably better to be a person of faith than not, regardless of how true it may be, is kind of his point, which I take. It's like, you know, the sense of, well, and the thing that startles me too about some of the atheists, the new atheists, especially Dawkins. I was just listening to Richard Dawkins' interview, and yeah, they don't really provide any alternative. They say we don't really need religion to be good people. And then they just leave it at that. And somebody recently asked him, you know, what you would replace it with. And Dawkins' response was, oh, just this respect for nature and science. Like, yeah, but that's not anything. Like, and most people don't go into science deep enough to have that awe of, like, how an atom works or something. Like, that's, you know, until, you know, we have this really ancient, time-honored system that has survived, you know, whether it is Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Hinduism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, these have all proved to be somehow really helpful to us, or really authentic, and have enriched our lives. Again, whether one or another is the quote unquote one true religion, it's like they're around here for some reason, and we shouldn't do away with them that quickly or easily, right? Like, there are downsides. There are religious wars too. I understand, you know, Sam Harris is big on that, fatwas and all of that. But you can't just ignore the benefits too.
There's been a lot of wars, religious wars throughout history. There's been a lot of non-related or wars that are not religious related as well.
Yeah.
Ultimately, all wars have really been up to, you know, about power and money, and then they're justified with religion.
Exactly. Yeah. They may or may not have happened just the same without, you know, without the religious reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I think it would, and it still does, even without religion. But that's how I've personally gone through my decision making, and I think it was a good thing overall. It has helped me make very good decisions and helped me be more family oriented and have goals around that, you know, being family. So it gives you purpose as well. And everybody has not maybe some people don't like to follow religion, but they have a sense of faith, of some kind of faith. And you can see it. Even Hawkins has a sense of faith in something. He just doesn't want to call it a religion, but that's fine. It's some kind of faith. So that's it's good. But yeah, it's eventually I ended up getting an MBA in healthcare. I know. How did I jump
Oh,
from
nice. Yeah.
war to health?
Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I went from war to healthcare. So I've worked for this company, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I made a whole bunch of mistakes. Met a lot of people who grew up really, really prepared in their careers, and it was very difficult for me to wrap my head around how do I compete in these areas. Like I remember working on a very complex report, and I spent so much time trying to understand how like Excel and automation works. It led me to learn how to do SQL even now. Learning to do Python eventually that sort of led me to, but it, just trying to understand these things. And there was a moment when I developed this thing, right? And it was like it worked 99.9% of the time. So it was a pipeline for identifying opportunities for future wins in a different company, not Lockheed, for military contracts.
Okay.
Most of them being in Afghanistan and things like that, and or Iraq. And I thought it was so cool. Like I thought this can be perfected. And I was in the marketing team, business development marketing. And I was like, this could be so cool. Like you can use science to help determine what might happen. And you really can with data and information, probabilities. But it was so elementary, and I concluded we must be like in an era where information is so unadvanced that they're hiring me to do this. And I'm trying to figure this out. No, there's no like science to it yet. And so that led me to understanding or trying to figure out what to do. And of course, I made dumb mistakes and of all kinds, everything you can think of, and almost everything, not everything, but almost. And I ended up like, had like I stepped on the tails and toes of the wrong people sometimes, that kind of stuff. You're like, even if you're right, when not to do that. And I didn't think about that. So I ended up leaving. I ended up leaving. I'm like, I gotta get away from this. I started over, started fresh. And I started volunteering in the hospitals. So I became like almost like an intern again. So for a while I went back to because I wanted to get into healthcare. And so nobody wanted to hire me in healthcare because I didn't have any healthcare experience, right? And then I volunteered at JPS and Texas Health Resource in Fort Worth. JPS gave me a lot more experience because they need more help. I like helped the nurses. The nurses even thought maybe I should become a nurse at one point, but I learned I don't want to be a nurse by helping the nurses. But it was cool. I'm glad I helped.
It's a tough
And
job.
then
My
thereafter,
wife's a
I
nurse.
it is a very tough job. It's you need a lot of you it has to be in you. Like you have to have a lot of love in you.
Yeah, I read a book. What was that book called? I forget. But he at one point he goes and is he's going to be a priest or in a monastery or something, and he goes and helps some of the monks take care of this person who's basically homeless and like defecates on themselves and can't take care of themselves at all. And he realizes, nope, I do not want to do this. He's like, I do not have the, like you said, that patience and love. He's like, no, this is not for me.
Every time I meet a nurse, I love them more. That's like I have a special, like I look at them and I'm like, man, they're so special. They really are. And then you hear a lot about the burnout and I'm like, and that's sad. You need to take care of these people. There's not enough people like that and who are capable and have who are qualified and at the same time very loving in that area. So something needs to change in that. I don't know exactly what, but maybe information will lead us to that to the solution of that.
Well, it's the
But
same in public schools. Like to a lesser extent, good teachers are are truly gifts as well, and easily get burned out and either burned out or they get promoted out of the classroom and away from the kids, which is sad as well. But
interesting.
Anyway,
my sister's a teacher, and I do remember growing up and overhearing teachers saying how they were tired. I remember one of them in elementary school in California. She yelled at us because she said, "You guys think we live here? We don't live. You, oh my gosh, you guys think we live here?" Like, she was almost having like a breakdown. And I'm like, and you're like, "You guys really think we live here? Like, we live at like there's a little box
in the building,
we
yeah,
there, and we get out." And I'm like, "Yeah, we did think that." And she's like, "Oh my god, no! I have a home. I have a family. I have a life ahead of this."
Yeah.
And that's when I first had like started having a sense of like empathy and like of teachers, but I never knew it was so universal, like at least widespread, like what you're telling me, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's a lot. So I think that's very interesting. You tell me that. But I went to, I worked at UT Southwestern too. After that, I got a job because I had taken some classes online to learn SQL that I had learned that some people were being trained for SQL in some of these other military government contract companies I worked for. And so I thought, well, I'm going to teach myself SQL then. And so I learned, and so I got an opportunity at UT Southwestern. You know, and SQL is just like having a bunch of Excel tables, and then the SQL is like a language that helps you pivot it automatically and connect different tables together to come up with a problem or come up with a table that can help you solve problems. It can be used multiple ways, but it's just automated. Like if you know how to use Excel, eventually you know how things run in the background. It's just information. You got like software engineers and engineers working on collecting the data and analyzing it, making it all good so that someone like me can pull it and then use it, and then executives can make conclusions out of it. And so eventually I started my MBA there. I jumped anytime, and I learned by that time an opportunity comes, you jump on it.
Yep.
So I jumped on that. There was an opportunity for an MBA, and I got in, and then there I met other smarter people who were nurses, who were pharmacists, who had been in healthcare for longer than me, and radiology type, you know. And so, and then someone else like me who was like a business analyst type, but they were even older and more experienced and advanced than me even then. So I felt like I was like in this small fish in this big, bigger fish type of place, but they were all very friendly and nice. I learned so much from them. One of them ended up getting a job in another company, and that's how I ended up working for them, where I'm currently at right now. You know, doing business type, this, you know, accounts payable, accounts receivable, but at the same time using SQL, using that knowledge to help me find better solutions and help automate a process. And I'm in the process of it. My head hurts so much, and I had to take a break from it, but of learning data science. So
what was it of learning?
I'm
what
so excited. Data science.
Oh, okay. Yeah
yeah, I'm so excited about like having to go through the pain of having to learn something. I think that's just something that's normal, but especially when you have family, it's harder. But it's I need to do it with the spirit, because yeah, there's so much. So that's my next step. Basically, that's where I'm at. And
nice.
I hope that I can use that to help the world in a better place, be in a better place. That's not guaranteed, but that's the mindset I'm going into it for.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a good place to stop, because we're actually at the hour mark, if you can believe it. But I have a couple things first. Unless is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we bring it to a close? Because I've got your pop quiz still.
Oh no, we're good.
All right, so before we do the quiz, I'll do my prepared statement, which I do every episode. Just a little positive thing that I like to say to all my guests. So, Carlos, because of your curiosity and spirit, I am sincerely grateful and better for having known you. You are one of the hundreds of kind, generous, and benevolent people I know in a world where we need every single one we can get. So keep being awesome and doing awesome things and studying some awesome data. All right?
Thank you.
You're
I
welcome.
Appreciate that.
All right, now.
I believe what you said.
Here is your quiz. Your last name is Barboza with a Z. which sounds very similar to Barbossa with two S's, which is the name of the character from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. So I'm going to ask you five questions about Captain Barbossa. Are you ready?
Oh, no. Okay.
They are multiple choice, and you have 7 seconds to answer, even though I never actually hold my guests accountable to that seven-second rule. All right, number one. Captain Barbossa is played by which famous English actor? A. Jeremy Irons, B. Geoffrey Rush, C. Hugh Grant, or D. Ralph Fiennes?
I'm really bad with art with famous people's names. I'm gonna have to guess C.
Incorrect. It's Geoffrey Rush. Geoffrey Rush, not Hugh Grant.
Geoffrey Rush.
Yeah. All right, number two. Captain Barbossa's first name is... I did not know this before I looked it up, so this is not a fair question. A. Hector, B. Henry, C. Jacob, or D. Jeremy?
I think it's Hector.
Correct. A is correct. Very nice. All right. I don't think I've had anybody fail all the questions before. All right, number three. What is unusual about Captain Barbossa at the beginning of the first Pirates movie? A, he is missing a hand. B, he is missing a leg. C, he is only a teenager. Or D, he is actually undead.
Undead?
Correct. Yeah, they were all cursed with the gold.
Because he is missing a hand. I mean, he technically is missing a hand and a leg.
Well, I guess, yeah. Well, they get ripped off, but he still has them connected, right? He doesn't have any peg legs or hooks or anything. All right, number four. I didn't know this one either, but I don't... Okay. In Portuguese, the name Barbossa means what? A, barbaric. B, shaving cream. C, mini palm trees. Or D, turtle. I was not able to confirm the answer to this. I found it in one place, which was like a little stupid article. But so I don't know if this is actually true or not.
I've looked for a while, and there's different languages, back in the day, but Barbossa, I think the closest one to it is the palm one.
Correct.
But there are no palms. There aren't palms in Portugal. It's a different kind of vegetation.
Yeah.
That's kind of shrub.
Look at you. You know your ancestry and name meanings. All right. Well, Portuguese is somewhat similar to Spanish, right? I know they're not that similar, but they share a lot of the same root words, I believe.
Barbossa is a... It sounds different. Like, it sounds like a bearded person. Barbossa. Like, Barbossa, you're very beautiful. But it also sounds like barbaric. It sounds like a lot of things. Barbossa, depending on what language, right? There was an actual pirate named Barbarossa.
Oh, nice.
Named because he had a red beard, but it's Barbarossa. Red,
yeah.
Rosa being
Rosa. So oh, that's interesting. All right. Latin. Look at you. You know your stuff. All right. This is good. Okay, last but not least, true or false? There was a Captain Barbossa on the original Disney ride that the movie is based off of, Pirates of the Caribbean. True or false?
I'll say true.
It is false. There was not an actual Barbossa. After the movie came out, they changed one of the characters to look more like him. But he was not based on an original character in the ride.
That's it would make sense if they did. It was Barbossa.
since there really was a Barbossa. Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Carlos. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for volunteering, too. You're one of the few ones that reached out to me rather than vice versa when I did that Facebook post.
Yes, thank you for having me and for this interview. I think it's really good. This is also a way for me to break out of my bubble, being so used to being just internal and not reaching out and being more willing to express and get to know people like yourself.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's funny, listening to you talk because you describe yourself as kind of a quieter, more shy kid. And that you weren't interested in marketing, but you seem from all of the stuff I've heard from you, you seem to be like, that seems to be a talent of yours, even if you don't haven't fully embraced it, to be the kind of outgoing self-marketing type of guy.
Maybe I need to embrace myself even
more. Tap into it a little more, yeah. All right, man. Thanks again. Get back to those kiddos and take another nap, maybe.
Yes. Naps are always good.
Bye. Hey guys, before the outro, just wanted to remind you that the How the Heck Have You Been podcast is brought to you by the Art by Marker deck of playing cards. So I hand drew the artwork for all 52 cards plus two jokers. It's pretty sweet. Head over to our website, artbymarker.com, to check them out and support this one-man show. Thank you. All right, that was the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Today's episode was recorded by Mark Dye. Our editor is Mark Dye, and he is also the executive producer. The intro and outro music was composed by Mark Dye in high school. It's really just me doing this. To support the How the Heck Have You Been podcast, visit artbymarker.com and buy some cool art. Thanks, y'all.